Hey aliens, just before we get into the episode, I'm here to give a little bit of a trigger warning. Today we will be talking about some sensitive material, including the recent OJ Simpson news and the world of wrestling and WWE, WWF. So if you are not a big fan of that or are sensitive to it, don't be afraid to skip over those sections and move on to the next topic. We love you. We care for you. Please take care of yourself. And if you need any help with anything, reach out to your local mental health hotline. And with that, on with the episode.
Aliens, welcome back to Area 51 and a Half, where we talk about all things science fiction, fantasy, horror, and pop culture. I am your host, Spooky Uncle John. With me, as always, is my co-host and producer,
Snyderman 501 Nick Snyder.
And where's Ren?
We don't have a Ren this week.
Where's Ren?
Ren is down in the States for an 1812 seminar weekend for they do reenacting.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It is.
I didn't even know they had seminars on those sort of things.
To be fair, neither did I until they signed up for this. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Nick. Oh my goodness, Nick. I have a few things to talk about. First of all. So remember when I was on the set of Prodigal Father? And we couldn't take selfies. We couldn't take pictures of the set or selfies or anything.
Yeah.
Guillermo del Toro has posted a selfie of him in front of the ship.
Of course he has.
And I'm like, oh, sure. He can do it.
Of course he can. He's Guillermo del Toro. He can do whatever he wants. To be fair.
But I'm just like, oh, my God. Really? And so I thought that was funny. I thought that was hysterical.
That is really funny.
Yeah. Sure, Guillermo, you can do it, but us lowly extras, we can't.
Well, that's because you're a lowly extra.
Well, I'm not.
You are the dirt upon his feet.
No, he knew my name.
He knew your name. That's true.
He knew my name. I am not the dirt upon his feet. I am the stain upon his shoe. Because
I guess that's an upgrade.
Anyway, speaking of movies, so we talked about Ghostbusters on the last one.
Yeah.
I went to see it.
Yeah.
I left, not because the movie was bad, but the movie had been ruined for me, and I got a pass from them because there were a group of noisy teenagers just talking throughout the whole thing and stomping up and down the stairs and the whole bit. So, I went back to see it again, liked it better this time, because the first time I was, like, hating on the movie, and I was like, okay, so it wasn't the movie's fault. I still have some criticisms of it, but it was overall not bad. So, then I decide I'm going to go see three other movies. Three movies in a row, Nick, noisy teenagers talking through it. I even said to the one group in the one movie, I said, could you please keep it down? You know, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, now, I'm not ripping on teenagers, but it is the group. It mm-hmm. does seem to be them lately. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there have been noisy adults, too.
Yeah.
But I just don't get how people, if you want to talk, if you want to have a conversation, if you want to giggle and laugh, go to a coffee shop.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to McDonald's. I paid to hear the movie, not you. And I'm sitting a great distance away. They're like way up there in the nosebleeds. I'm down at the front.
And like here's the thing with me. Like I've had these experiences over the years. Like I remember going to see Butterfly Effect, and the girl sitting next to me was annoying the living crap out of me. I remember going to see Alien versus Predator with my dad, and he wound up threatening to shove his foot up one of the kid's ass and then kick it back down.
Yeah, but this is the thing, though. Like, that used to be the occasional.
Yeah, exactly. This is over the years. This is
three movies in a row, to the point that when I saw Civil War last night, I sat there and I said, God, I hope there's not a bunch of teenagers that are going to spoil this one for me. You know?
Like, yeah.
I actually said that to the management.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not fair. Like, it's like, not. There are no manners left.
Tickets are expensive. You're paying to be there to watch a movie. To me, the cinema is sacred. I love going to the cinema. It's, for lack of a better term, it's my church.
Yeah.
It's where I go to have that religious experience, because I love film. I love theater. And that's it for me. If someone ruins it for me, I remember years ago, I got into a verbal altercation with some guy because his girlfriend kept kicking the back of my seat. And I asked her multiple times politely to stop until I wasn't polite anymore. Then the boyfriend got involved. It was a problem. But again, far and few between. I don't like it when people go to the theater.
No, I hear you.
Let me just rephrase that. I don't like it when people go to the theater. The theater should just be for me and me alone.
I have had that experience. Isn't it glorious?
Isn't it great?
It's glorious. But yeah, I remember years ago seeing a movie and this kid in front of me kept being a brat, basically, and people would tell him to be quiet and he'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. And so finally I'd had enough of him and I said, would you please be quiet? And he says, oh, my bad, I'm sorry. And I leaned forward and said, you are not sorry because you have been told multiple times by multiple people, and now it's me, to shut up, and you don't do it. So you are not sorry. So I'm telling you for the last time, young man, shut up.
You know what's, that's the thing. Sorry. You keep doing it, so you're not sorry, but anyway. Now, another thing, we'll move on in a bit, but another thing that has become commonplace in movie theaters that really bothers me, cell phones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point, the movie tickets around our area have gone up. And the amount that you get from this concession has gone down.
Yeah.
So, like, for a movie ticket, a small popcorn and a drink, it's $30.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I just dropped $30. I don't want to be disturbed.
Yeah, exactly. And why? Yeah, anyway.
Speaking of religious experiences, two of those movies that I saw were Immaculate and The First Omen. So, folks, this is your spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. So, as I mentioned, Nick, I saw Immaculate and The First Omen. So I saw Immaculate first, and then I saw The First Omen within, like, nights of each other. Nick? They're the exact same movie.
That's hilarious.
I'm not even being hyperbolic. I'm not even kidding. Beat for beat, story-wise, everything, even some of the scenes, the exact same movie. I think somebody sat there and went, hey, we got a double whammy here. Let's just change a couple things. And we can make two movies!
That's hilarious. Oh, my God.
Now, here's the thing. Both movies were really, really well done. Okay? Both of them have to deal with basically the Catholic Church doing buffoonery.
Buffoonery?
And these unwanted pregnancies. And, you know, like, there's thematically, beat for beat's the same movie. So, thematically, you always have this idea of you know, my body, my choice, violence against women being stuck in a situation where they are being abused, where they can't get out of it, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I get the theme of it, and that makes really for great horror stories. But here's the thing. If you're only going to choose one, because they were both wonderfully done. Like, they're good movies in the way they're constructed, the way they're acted, the way they're presented. Choose Immaculate, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because Immaculate is a fresh and original story. First Omen screws up the story of The Omen.
Really?
Yeah. Because this is the thing, like, we've always said about movies not being able to, like, oh, well, you can just watch the original and this doesn't taint it. No, that's not true. It does taint it because it changes the story. It changes it. So this is a prequel to The Original Omen with Gregory Peck.
Right.
The Original Omen, you know, it's like Damien's mother died in childbirth, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, right? That is a solid story. That, like, even if you don't have to have this Omen 2 and Omen 3, that's a solid story. But in that trilogy, that is about Damien's rise.
Right.
You know, so that, I get it. Like, Omen 3 is not a great sequel, but I get the trilogy. So if you're doing that story, that's the story. You don't need the prequel. All right, that's not, it's kind of like Rogue One. We didn't really need to know how they got the plans to Princess Leia. That, it's a great movie, but it's irrelevant. And it's the same thing here with the first Omen. It doesn't need to be told. The story does not need to be there. But if you're going to do it, you have to honor the first one.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that because Damien's mother has to die. She can't become this idea at the end where she survives, that Damien has a twin sister and they're going to just go off with this whole other, you know, Omen thing where she is this badass heroine. Now, what kills me is that the girl that plays Damien's mother in this has gone on to say, I think it was her. It might have been the girl that did Immaculate. They're the same movie, so it doesn't matter who said it. But they said about, well, isn't it? It's good, and it's about time that women have claimed horror.
What? What?
The amount of feedback that she has gotten for this very stupid statement, because it's like, people are like, well, I guess Ripley doesn't exist. I guess there's no Laurie Strode. Heather Langenkamp from Nightmare Before, Nightmare on Elm Street. And they are like, women and horror, it's synonymous with it, because that is the heartbeat of it.
I mean, not that I'm a big fan of the movie, but even recently, Lauren Laverna from Terrifier 2, she was a pretty badass lady.
Oh, but not only that, because, like, maybe she's sitting there thinking, well, you know, you have Michael Myers, and you have Freddy Krueger, and you have Leatherface, all dudes. Yeah, all bad dudes that are harming the women.
Okay, but
what? You know, and that's the idea of we've said this before, that's the idea of the devil's avatar coming for the dude, because you're sinning. They're morality tales.
Yeah.
You know? So...
But even so,
you have Reagan.
Yeah.
You know, the Omen is like, the Exorcist isn't about the Exorcist.
Yeah.
I mean.
But even if you look at other horror movies as well, you got The Orphan, you've got Ma, you've got the one with the two girls, Mama. I think it was Mama.
Like, yeah. Yeah. The Last House on the Left. I Spit on Your Grave.
These are horror films where the woman is not, like, the horror genre is a widely diverse genre that features strong men, that features strong women, that features strong everybody, because at the end of the day, someone has to rise up at the end to defeat the monster.
Jeepers Creepers. Jeepers Creepers. Prime example. It's such a beautiful line because it's meta. Where Derry is going to go down into the well, and she sits there and she says, you know that moment in a horror movie where somebody does something stupid and everybody hates them for it? This is it.
Yeah. Boy, was she right.
That's such a meta line. And it's all this whole thing about her chasing her brother and trying to save themselves from the creeper. She is the lead.
Yeah.
She is the lead.
She is the lead, yeah.
And, you know... In Halloween, okay, Donald Pleasance is the lead, but so is Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah. They are the leads.
Yeah.
Girl, do your homework.
Yeah, exactly.
Do your homework. But I just have to sit there and say, you know, I've railed enough against it. There are things in this movie I did not need to see that actually disturbed me a little bit, that I'm just like, you know, on the big screen, I did not need to see that. No, thank you. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I don't want to spoil that part of it. But if you got to choose between the two, see Immaculate. See Immaculate, because it's a fresh story, whereas the first Omen, it ruins it for me. Just Hollywood, stop. Stop. When you have something good, just stop. We don't need to go back there. Yeah. We do. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't. Don't offer it to me. Just don't. And on that note, Nick, how can our aliens get a hold of us?
Well, they can find us on our social medias. That's Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at the Area51H. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube by searching for Area51.5. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for all sorts of exclusive goodies and a shout out during our podcast.
Yay! And now it is time for Nick's Pop Culture Roundup.
Indeed it is. John, it has been... So we've been away for a couple of weeks. You know, Easter. Yeah. I've been busy with a bunch of wrestling stuff.
I had some personal stuff in my life, which I'm not going to get into here.
It's been a couple of weeks, but there has been so much over the past couple of weeks. There's been a plethora of movie news. It's legitimately hard to boil it down. Some exciting, some questionable. From the announcement of a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover, a reimagining of the Blair Witch Project from Lionsgate and Blumhouse, and a series of Avatar The Last Airbender animated films coming to theater, it was a packed couple weeks. But here's a few I'd actually like to really kind of highlight here. So there's going to be a Chris Farley biopic starring Paul Walter Hauser. It's being produced by Lorne Michaels. I'm excited to see that because Chris Farley was a huge part of the 90s for me. Him and David Spade, his comedies with David Spade were a huge part of my growing up. So I'm excited for that. Another thing, Daniel Roebuck, Grandpa Munster, is going to be playing Santa Claus in Terrifier 3. Now, we already know that Terrifier 3 is taking place during Christmas, which is interesting. But more interesting for me is how Santa Claus is going to play into it. Is he going to get terrorized by art, or is he going to turn out to be the unsung hero of the Terrifier franchise?
You know, that's really interesting. I don't think that they're going to waste Daniel Roebuck's appearance in this.
No.
But, you know, the Terrifier movies, I mean, oh my God. You talk about your body horror and your gross out. Like, I don't think I could handle it on the big screen. I've never seen them on the big screen.
Me either.
Because they just don't play around here because they're independent. But I met David Howard Thornton at Frightmare in the Falls in Niagara Falls last autumn. Nice guy. Really nice guy.
Yeah.
And very opinionated politically.
Oh, really?
Yes. If you follow him on Facebook, you will. He does not hold back. And you know what? I love him for that. It's like, do I always agree with him? No, but it's nice to see that he doubles down on his opinions. But he's a wonderful guy, actually, if you meet him. But to be able to play this pantomime clown with such veracity, and it's a mime kind of thing. Like, there's no lines. It's all facial. It's all body language. Yeah. It's all
how he's brilliant.
It's amazing. Just amazing. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, with the addition of Daniel Roebuck, nice little cherry on top of that sundae.
Oh, 100%. Now, I mentioned earlier, there was a Transformers G.I. Joe Last Airbender animated film coming from Paramount. Paramount's also planning, and this is, I am in, Paramount's also planning a live-action R-rated adaptation of the acclaimed Ninja Turtles graphic novel, The Last Ronin. And I cannot wait for that.
You are a turtle fan.
Yeah.
A huge, huge turtle fan. Came out in the 80s, you know, when I was a teenager. Loved the Ninja Turtles. I haven't followed it completely. Tell me about the idea of it being an R-rated.
So The Last Ronin is a graphic novel that takes place in the near future. It follows one of the turtles because the other three are dead.
Sadness ensues.
Sadness, graphic violence, and just terror ensues. And one of the hooks of it is that you don't know which Ninja Turtle is the Last Ronin until the very end of the book.
Oh, okay.
So you don't know who has survived, just one of them has.
Right.
Splinter's dead, the three of the brothers are dead, and it's,
So it's a feel-good movie of the year.
Feel-good movie of the year, absolutely. It's going to be, if like they do it live action, it's R-rated, it's going to be visceral. And it's going to be awesome.
But they need to make sure that they market that properly.
Yeah. Not so, like Sausage Party. So, John, over the past few weeks, as I said, we've been busy over the past few weeks. One of the things that I've been dealing with is a very poor customer service issue from a company in Toronto called Game Shack.
Okay.
I had, you know me, I love my Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite characters is Dress Duarden, who is the main character in the Crystal Shard and has been featured throughout Dungeons & Dragons. So as part of the 35th anniversary of the Crystal Shard of Dritzed, they released a couple of different miniature packs. Now, these things are expensive. These are like 70, 80 bucks.
Right.
So I ordered the Dritzed Duarden Family and Foes pack. Seven figures, 70 bucks. All right, great stuff. I ordered it. It comes from Game
Shack. That's not bad. Seven figures.
Yeah, 10 bucks a figure.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It comes from Game Shack in Toronto. And guess who's missing from the pack? Dritzed. So, okay. This seems like an easy enough thing to deal with. I call them, say, hey, my pack that's supposed to have Dritzed doesn't have Dritzed. Can you do something for me? Yeah, email us. Okay. Thanks, I guess. So I email them. And their response was basically, deal with it yourself.
What exactly did they say? Do you remember?
They told me to contact WizKids, which is the manufacturer.
Okay.
And I'm like, that is poor customer service. Because, like, if it had been me, and I've dealt with, like, I've been working customer service for many years.
This is your career.
This is what I do. So maybe I'm being a little hard on them because of that, but it wouldn't have seemed difficult to me to go, okay, sorry that that happened. Let's see what we can do for you. I'll contact, if it's a case of they don't have another one in stock, I'll contact WizKids and see what we can do. We can arrange some kind of refund, something along those lines.
Right, right.
That's what I would have went to as a customer service representative.
Right.
These guys just went, contact WizKids. Okay. So I did that. Never heard back from WizKids, which it sucks to begin with. But I also reported them because you're able to report sellers. And I also went ahead and filed a credit card dispute, which I've never had to do before. So to make it right for myself, I was able to find the specific figure I was looking for on eBay. So now I have the set. Cost me a little bit more than I wanted to, but there it is. So to our listeners, this is kind of my buyer beware thing, because I'm not telling you not to do business with these people, but I am asking that you put some thought into it first, because if that's how they treated me, it's how they're going to treat everybody else.
You know, it's interesting that I know this isn't the foray of our forum. But customer service anymore just blows, no matter where you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you, yeah.
And I don't know why, but it is what it is. It is what it is. I can think of a number of reasons why you might have been treated that way. Nothing to do with you, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, like maybe they've been inundated with this. There might have been a problem from WizKids. You know, like obviously the person is probably not being paid huge wages.
Probably not. They are a store in Toronto. And, like, there's the thing. Like, I looked into it to see if this was an issue. And normally that type of thing would be all over the D&D Reddit. No. Nothing like that. So
it's a one-off. And they didn't treat you well.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I react to it when they don't treat me well. So, yeah.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to issue just a second trigger warning here, because we have a very sensitive topic that we need to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
And so if O.J. Simpson triggers you, you've been warned. Nick, O.J. Simpson has passed away.
Yeah, cancer. Holy crap. I was walking to work when I saw that news. And for our younger audience to understand the shock that's involved in this, O.J. Simpson became, for all the wrong reasons, mind you, became an icon in the mid-90s. So I saw...
I don't know if icon's the right word. He became very infamous.
Yeah.
Now, let's back up. Let's back up just a minute. O.J. Simpson was a star football player.
Yes, he was.
And was able to parlay that cred into doing movies.
Yep.
Some of the greatest movies, like the Naked Gun series, he was in the Towering Inferno. You know, he was a star.
He was originally up for the role of the Terminator as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So he was a star. Now, we go to the 90s.
Yep.
And this is where somebody just unzips and whizzes all over their legacy.
Yeah.
Because O.J. Simpson, one fine morning, it was a beautiful day, and CNN is just watching everybody stopping, watching the LAPD chase a white Bronco down the highway.
In the slowest car chase ever.
No, it wasn't the slowest car chase ever. It was a pretty good car chase, but I mean, everything had been blocked off.
Everything had been completely
blocked off. They were after this guy. Who is in this white Bronco? Everybody is asking. It was O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
O.J. Simpson was on the lam. He was fleeing a scene. His wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and boyfriend Ronald Goldman were dead.
Yeah.
Not looking good for the juice. The juice is on the loose.
I remember being a kid, and prior to this, yeah, the only, because I didn't watch sports, the only prior acknowledgement I had of Simpson was in the Naked Gun movies.
Yeah.
And I was, because this is the type of thing that you only see at this time, I'd only seen in a movie, right? Yeah. So I was like bewildered by this. This was huge. This was shocking.
Right.
And then everything else after that was just a deluge because it didn't let up. It made so many people famous, so many people iconic. I still remember the name of the judge, Judge Lance Ito.
Yeah.
How many judges rang around someone's head for that long?
Oh, Nick, I'm going to blow your mind here a little bit. One of the biggest reality TV shows is Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That started with Papa Kardashian.
Yeah, it did.
Being in the O.J. Simpson case, being like one of the lawyers.
Yeah.
It gets better.
Oh, no.
It gets better because Mama was rumored to have had an affair with the juice.
Oh, really?
Yes. To the point that I'm not trashing anybody's names. To the point that one of the Kardashians' paternities was in question. Now, the problem with OJ dying is the fact that this brings up all kinds of trauma. It brings up trauma for the Brown family, brings up trauma for the Goldman family, brings up trauma for the Kardashians, because the Kardashian in question was being inundated with all kinds of things when she posted this little thing about her, you know, working out, and they're like, yeah, where'd you get that booty from? You know, that stuff like that. So it's bringing up racism. It's bringing up all kinds of things. So this is one of those trials that has never gone away.
No.
You know, people dressed up as Judge Ito for Halloween.
Even. I remember seeing pictures of people with the glove.
Yeah.
If the glove don't, fit, you must have quit.
Yeah. I did my law thesis when I was doing the paralegal course, and we had to do like our big presentation at the end. I did it all on forensic science, and you betcha I explained why O.J. Simpson got off. And it boils down to this. I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm just saying that because the forensics got messed up, it was questionable. They could not. There was reasonable doubt.
And in the aftermath of all of that, the man still had the gall to release a book called
If I Did It.
Like, so, yeah.
Like, listeners, aliens, we're not making light of this. This was a very traumatic situation, right?
It really was.
But it also speaks to pop culture. You never would have had Keeping Up with the Kardashians had Papa Kardashian not been the lawyer.
Well, even to this, like up until then, and even to this day, I've never listened to an ongoing court case on the radio in my classroom. Oh. But when I was in school, the teacher had the radio on. We were listening to this in school.
People were skipping work. They were skipping school. We were riveted to the TV. Like, the O.J. Simpson case was huge.
It was massive. Like, literally case of the century. And there's been so many big cases since then, but nothing has really touched the level of pop culture, of pure infamy has.
But when you think about what O.J. Simpson also meant to the black culture in the United States of America, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was their hero. Like, you couldn't touch him. And then all of a sudden there's this, right? So, and not only that, but this was only like 2 years after the Rodney King incident.
Yeah, this was 94.
You know, the LAPD beat Rodney King basically to death. And it's like, so, I mean, there was a lot of conflicting emotions going on at that time.
Yeah.
And the media really tried to divide white into black. Like, anybody who was white, it's like, yeah, he did it. And that's what the media tried to sort of portray, which wasn't really fair, because the black community wasn't saying he didn't do it. The black community was just wondering, are we going to see a fair trial?
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of the difference. Like, you saw this as an adult. I saw this as a kid. I wasn't aware enough to understand that's what the media was doing.
Yeah.
I just remember the excitement around it. And it's a horrible situation, but at the end of the day, we got excited about stuff like this.
It's not so much that the media was doing it. It's just that's the thing that they do, because the media stopped being about the story and about the facts, and it's become about the ratings.
Yeah.
So if you can do something hyperbolic, if you can do something that's controversial, if you can get, you know, people stirred up, then you get to sell the story on your network.
Well, and this is one of the stories that really I'm not going to say it started it, because it didn't, but this is what cemented the whole idea of ratings for journalism.
Yeah.
That we now see today.
Yeah.
The effect that this had on not just pop culture, but society as a whole.
And media. Is huge. And, yeah. I mean, like, when there's an American trial, like, you think about Oliver North and the Iran-Contra hearings, right? In front of the Senate. America celebritizes people, you know, when they shouldn't be. Marcia Clark had to change her hairstyle in the O.J. Simpson trial because they thought she was too dowdy.
See, and there's the thing is, like, if you look at a lot of the big-time cases that's happened since then, American media is just chasing the dragon, chasing the dragon. They're trying to get that same sensation from the O.J. case. And that's just, honestly, that was...
Well, they've been doing it all along, but the O.J. Simpson case just blew the lid right off of it. You know? And so then, they can make a celebrity out of anybody. The Octomom.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not a celebrity. She's just like...
Casey Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, even when you get into Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, that's a huge story, right? But it's like, they still did this whole idea of celebritizing Monica Lewinsky. You know, this innocent, not innocent, but this poor little intern who was kind of a victim of somebody who was in power over her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And... That's kind of the thing. And this is my last thing I'll say about this is the news media has a real wicked way of taking people who should not be in the pop culture pantheon and placing them directly there.
Yeah.
Like, if I cannot sit here and say that Monica Lewinsky is not pop culture, because she 100% was back in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, they will even do this with the president of the United States of America. You'll see them on celebrity magazines. They're not a celebrity. They are a politician. They are the leader of your country. You know, and they do not celebritize them. Please just don't. But anyway, one final thought that we want to do before we move on to our main topic is that if you are in a situation of domestic abuse, please reach out to the various organizations that can help you.
We'll have phone numbers in the write-up for the show.
So, Nick, all of this happened after we'd already planned what our show was.
Yeah.
So there's no easy segue, but we are going to be talking about something that is near and dear to my heart, near and dear to your heart, something that was just ran rampant in the 80s.
Yep.
Everybody knew it, whether you were a fan or not, and that is Hulkamania, brother! Hulkamania,
brother. All right, so before we get into Hulkamania, so as I mentioned earlier, I've been busy with wrestling stuff over the past couple weeks. Me and a couple buddies, we got to go see AEW Collision live at Budweiser Gardens in London, Ontario. So I learned something about myself that night. If I go see a live wrestling show, the critical glasses are off. I can't do it. I am a teenager again. I'm having a good time. It was so much fun. There was a lot of surprises. I marked out the entire night. And something that was really a nice surprise was Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, comes out at the start of the show to thank everybody for coming and comes out at the end again to thank everybody for coming and saying, we'll be back. So that was really cool. He seems like a super nice guy. He seems like a total nerd. I love him. I feel like I could be friends with him. But such a fun show. There was some nice surprises. The only thing I can really say where I would criticize them is gimmick your tables so that they break properly. Other than that, though, I had a ton of fun. Amazing show. Would love to go again.
But you know what? This is the sort of thing, like, I know that the wrestling factions existed.
Yeah.
You know, and then Vince McMahon buys them all off. But I really feel that modern day wrestling really was built on Hulkamania.
It was.
And we're talking about it because it's what? How many years now?
40 years of Hulkamania. So, and that's, and WrestleMania 40 just happened.
Right.
Which was in itself amazing. The Rock, this kind of ties in because with Hulk Hogan and with some other wrestlers, you remember them as they are. As they are now sometimes. And you forget just how good they could be.
And what they were.
What they were.
Yeah.
So, and I'll talk about that a little bit more with the Ultimate Warrior match. But with The Rock, The Rock was at this year's WrestleMania competing in a tag team match. And I forgot how good of a heel, how good of a bad guy The Rock could be. He was nasty in this feud with Cody Rhodes. He told Cody Rhodes he was going to take his belt, whip him with it, and go cover it in his own blood and go show it to his mom. And he did that at WrestleMania. It was wicked. Dude, you need to see the build up to this match and the match itself.
Wow.
It was insane. All in all, great night, great show. I do wish they would go back to one night shows because when you get to that second night, it's a lot. WrestleMania is two nights now, Saturday and Sunday night.
Oh my God.
4 hour shows each. It is a lot. Though really cool though. One thing I do want to bring up, then we'll move on to Hulkamania. Seth freaking Rollins is very flamboyant in his entrances. And on his match with Drew McIntyre, he came out with the Philadelphia Mummers, who are these they do these parades and they wear these big extravagant costumes, and it was just so much fun watching that. But anyway, so that was WrestleMania 40. Great show. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, go check it out. There was a lot of really neat things. There was a big FU from Staff McMahon to Vince McMahon. That was interesting. But everything absolutely wonderful. But you're right. Hulkamania was kind of the birth of the golden age of wrestling.
It was the tentpole.
Yeah, and that includes WrestleMania as well.
So before we begin, Nick, I think what younger generations have to understand about this, I was there. I was there at the birth of it. I was a teenager. It was the 80s.
Yeah.
Hulkamania was huge in the 80s. If you weren't a wrestling fan, you still knew who Hulk Hogan was, what he was, and how important he was.
Yeah.
There was cereal. There was a cartoon. There was...
I love that cartoon.
There was all kinds of... There were toys. There were everything. All built on Hulkamania.
Yeah.
So where does it start? Where did Hulkamania start? What made the Hulkster the Hulkster?
So there's a lot of conjecture over where it starts. But we're going to start with when he won the title from the Iron Sheik. The month prior, the Iron Sheik had won the title from Bob Backlund, who himself had a lengthy title reign.
Right.
Now, at that point, and even still to this day, there's the whole idea of the foreign menace. So you had the Iron Sheik, who was the foreign menace going up against Hulk Hogan.
The great American hero.
The great American hero, exactly. And a lot of that is actually what played around Hulkamania as well. But he won the title from the Iron Sheik, and boom, Hulkamania goes into overdrive at that point. He is everywhere. As you said, cereal, toys, cartoon. When I was a kid, I had a bed sheet with Hulk and the Road Warriors and Big Boss Man and a whole bunch of others on it.
And he was there, like, he was like the, like I said, the great American hero, but also this whole idea of something for kids, right? Like, wrestling wasn't really that vicious at that time. You know, like, they did do the gimmick of, you know, the blood on the forehead, but those were sort of done for special matches.
Yeah, exactly.
This was something you could bring the whole family to. Vince McMahon at the time was not insane and had marketed it properly. He had Jesse Ventura on the mic. You had, you know, Vince McMahon didn't even know he was the owner.
Yeah.
You know, thought he was just a commentator. And they just sold Hulk Hogan so well because he always had that tagline saying to the kids, say your prayers, eat your vitamins.
So one of my favorite things is it was actually Jesse McMahon who brought Terry Bollea into the WWF as Hulk Hogan in 1980. But at that point, Jesse McMahon was very much about the cultural heroes. You know, you had Bruno Sammartino for the Italians and all that stuff, right? He wanted Hulk Hogan to be an Italian. Now, at this point, an Irishman. And he wanted him to dye his hair red. And Hulk Hogan was like, I'm already going bald. I don't want to do that, brother. So it looks like you're going to have a blonde Irishman. So that's how he got the name Hulk Hogan, by the way, is just Jesse McMahon wanted an Irishman.
Right.
So moving right along, WrestleMania 3, one of the...
The Pontiac Silverdome.
Ooh, this is one of the... Not just one of the biggest moments in Hulkamania, but one of the biggest moments in wrestling, period.
Let's save that for a minute, because I think we're getting just a little bit ahead of ourselves with that, because like that is a whole discussion. We could have a whole podcast based on Andre the Giant turning heel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what we have to understand is that before we get to that build-up, that whole thing of solidifying Hulkamania.
Yeah.
You know, so he defeats Iron Sheik, and Hulk Hogan is not defeated. Like, he held that belt a long time.
Four years.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a record, but...
No.
But, like, that's a long time.
So the only person that has held it longer than him was Bruno Sammartino, who held it for, like, 8 years or something.
But in terms of the WWE / WWF...
Still, it's still the same lineage. Okay. So that's... Bruno Sammartino has the record.
So, anyway. So... Kids are loving him. They got the headband, the whole thing, right? Everybody loves Andre the Giant. He had this feud with Big John Studd because he was the only person that could actually sort of mirror him in a way because he was a big man himself. And then there is this surprise moment where Hulk Hogan's on the mic and Andre the Giant comes down, smiles the whole bit. And it starts this feud between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, where Andre the Giant accuses Hulk Hogan of being jealous of him. You know, just out of nowhere. He's the biggest thing. He knows he's the biggest thing. I'm the biggest thing in wrestling, you know. And to everybody's shock and surprise, he has come into the circle with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Oh my God, Bobby Heenan.
The ultimate manager villain.
So I'm going to ask you a question on this because I've only seen this in recap. You were able to see this live. What was this like for you?
We don't have a camera in front of my face, but I speak for all of North America when I say we all did the Kevin from Home Alone. We didn't scream, but we all went, whoa!
It must have been such a shock because, like,
it was a shock because who didn't love Andre the Giant?
Exactly. And I know Andre's career up to that. Very well loved guy. Never really. He played a heel a couple times when he was younger, but in the WWF, he was never a heel. He was always this big guy that was the big. He was an attraction.
Yeah.
And never portrayed as a heel in WWF. And you've got Hulk Hogan just like seeing all this, because these are the attraction for me as a small kid to all of this. Yeah. I didn't see WrestleMania 3 live because I was too young, but these are real life superheroes.
Yeah.
That's what you have. You have Hulk versus Captain America.
Yeah.
And legitimately in the ring. Yeah. And it's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, and the whole thing too is like this is the power of it. At Parkside, you know, where you and I both went to high school but different years in the 80s, Mr. Jenkins got a hold of like these Hulkamania tapes.
Yeah.
And Noonhour, we got to go into the big lecture hall watch it.
That's awesome.
You know, it was just amazing. That's how big it was. And it was crowded. And I even had fellow students going, I didn't think you'd be into wrestling. It's like 3 years with my dad. Anyway, we're a little off topic. So here we go with the ultimate showdown. I mean, people still speak in hushed tones about WrestleMania 3 at the Pontiac Silverdome in Michigan.
So one of the neat things about wrestling sometimes is that it's guys who are just full on ego.
Yeah.
And that can even happen with Andre the Giant. There were people backstage watching this going, I have no idea if Andre is going to do business here because he doesn't have to.
Hulk Hogan has gone on record for saying it's the only match he was nervous about because he didn't know if Andre would let him lift him or not.
Yeah. Now, true to Andre's good guy-ishness, he of course did.
Yeah.
And it created one of the biggest moments in wrestling history.
Yeah.
One of the most rewatched moments in wrestling history.
Oh, yeah. And it was really one of the penultimate matches. I mean, like when you talk about matches, I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than this because you always expected pretty much Andre the Giant to come down and win.
Yeah.
Like the only person that might have been able to win against him was Big John Studd, who coincidentally, I think, was managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan.
I think so, yeah.
So this, don't quote me on that. So this is that whole idea of the good script writing here, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, well, if I've got this big guy and I can't beat Andre the Giant with him, why don't I bring Andre the Giant over?
If you can't beat him, join him. Yes.
And let's go after Hogan. Let's get him that belt.
Which is such a Heenan move.
Yeah.
Because he was a weasel.
Yeah.
But I loved him. He was so good. So yeah, Andre the Giant, and we all know who Andre the Giant is. Like, he doesn't need to be described. He doesn't need to be introduced. Whether you know him from movies or you know him from wrestling, you know who he is.
Yeah.
And he's just so big. And even the way Hogan lifted him, you could see he was still struggling.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Oh, of course.
And it's just the story behind it.
Doesn't matter how big your pythons are. That is a heavy, heavy man to try and lift.
Yeah.
You know, and so like just imagine this whole beautiful scenario where Andre the Giant is coming down the ring, and he's not walking down to the ring. He is on like a cart of some sort. He's on like a transporter, and they are bringing him to the ring with Bobby the Brain Heenan. This massive, and the crowd is just going wild. And then you have Hogan's signature theme song, Real American.
Yep.
Like, it's just the crowd is nuts. And that stare down between the two of them.
Right up to it, yeah. Neat little Easter egg I found in my current 2K24 wrestling game. If you play as Andre the Giant in the WrestleMania 3 arena, he comes down in the cart, which is just cool. But I remember the match ending and Andre being so angry. He gets back in the cart and you can see that he's just moving his arm, signifying people, not that anybody's actually in his way, but he's moving his arm around to signify people get out of his way. He was so angry. He played that so well.
And he's yelling back at Hogan, and Heenan is just there with his face in
because
his hands.
He didn't think it would happen. And Heenan's facials and his ability as a manager was bar none the best.
Yeah.
So good. So
Hogan defeats
Andre the Giant. So, and that was the thing, is Hulkamania was based around taking on the best of the best of the best. Hogan worked with the people that if Hogan wasn't in WWF, they would be the top of the card.
Yeah.
Andre the Giant. And, of course, Macho Man, Randy Savage. So we have the forming of the mega powers. Now, this is when I actually started becoming conscious of wrestling when I was a kid. And it was really cool because Savage and Hogan were both faces, but they did not like each other.
Yeah.
They were bitter rivals. Well,
Macho Man was a face, yes, but he was one of those faces that was also a bit of a heel.
Tweener, as they're called in the business.
Yeah. He had this sort of arrogance, and you know, I remember like the way that they built things up in the 80s is so much better than the way they build things up now, because there was this whole idea of here's the new guy, Randy the Macho Man Savage. Oh yeah, you know, and he's amazing. He's doing like the elbow from the top rope. It's fantastic. Who's he gonna manage? Who is he gonna pick as his manager? You know, and everyone, you know, Bobby the Brain Heenan, is it Classy Freddie Blassie, is it Mr. Fuji, who's it going to be? None of them. Comes down with Miss Elizabeth.
Yep.
And of course, teenage boys went, good choice.
Yeah.
Very good choice. Because, you know, and so there's that whole thing, because that's what you're talking about. And I remember the match, and I can't remember who it was that was beaten up on Macho Man.
Honky Tonk Man.
Was it the Honky Tonk Man?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Miss Elizabeth is beside herself.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what to do because the beating is going on and on and on. And she eats herself back to the back.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what's she doing? Well, the crowd, viewers at home, just astounded. Who's she come out with? Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan just looks at her and he's confused and he's like, what's going on? And she's trying to drag him, you know, to, and she's pointing at the ring and saying whatever improv thing she's saying. And Hogan looks at her and he looks at the ring, looks at her, and he's like, yeah, okay, I'll do this for you. And he goes and
what that is one of those moments in WWE that just proves how good they are at milking a moment.
Yeah.
Because they will just draw that out until the crowd is ready to just break.
Yeah. Crowd is salivating at this point.
Yeah.
Know? And then there was the stare down afterwards, after the ring is cleared, between Savage and Hogan. Because, you know, like, this is the thing. And then, of course, Savage extends his hand and Hogan takes it and their buddies.
And, like, even when they do the handshake, it's just milking it because they're like, they're putting their hand out, and they're, like, slowly moving towards each other's hand.
Like,
like there's a force pushing them against each other.
Is this going to be an alliance? Is it going to be a setup? What's the whole thing? And, you know, and then, of course, you see, like, the pythons. Like, the muscle and all that kind of stuff. Like
Hulkamania and Macho Madness together. Like, just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and this is the thing. Like, I think that in the day, like, they would put really good partners together.
Yeah.
You know, like, they had really good tag teams back then. You know,
as we're nowadays, they just put random people together and hope for the best.
But matching Hogan into anybody with a tag team is just, it was gold.
Yeah.
You could do no wrong with Hulk Hogan. Nothing.
No, no kidding.
You know, and then I guess we get to that point. And maybe you don't want to get to that point just yet. Maybe you want to talk about something else. You probably want to talk about Hogan and the Warrior.
Well, let's talk about... So, they break up, right? The Mega Powers break up.
Yeah.
And that becomes this huge schmoz at WrestleMania 5. And the storytelling in that was brilliant because during a match with the Twin Towers... Akeem knocked Savage into Miss Elizabeth and Hogan took her to the back to get medical attention.
Right.
And Savage felt he had been abandoned. Yeah. And that's what led to that match. And it was a brilliant match, a wonderful match. Like, honestly, those two in the ring together, absolutely brilliant. Like, can't go wrong with that. But yeah, with Ultimate Warrior, that was WrestleMania 6, right? Now, I've watched that match recently. And remember when I was talking about The Rock and I said you kind of remember them as they are now as opposed to what they were good at?
Yeah.
So I had forgotten how good Hulk Hogan was, not just at selling a move, but drawing out the pain of the move to draw you into the match.
And he was excellent on the mic.
He was. So there, one move that I've always been kind of, that's cheesy, is the bear hug.
Right.
Because your arms are free. You could just clap them in the head.
Yeah.
But during this match, Warrior has Hogan in the bear hug. And Hogan is selling it. He looks like he is in crippling pain. He looks like he is being ripped apart. And it's drawing me right into this match that I've seen a billion times before, that I've seen so many times in the past. I know the outcome. I know how this is going to work. But he gets into the bear hug and he's hulking it. And it just draws you so into it.
I was just going to talk about that. I was just going to talk about Hogan's finishing move, because it is like the lamest finishing move ever, but he sells it because that was the whole king. That was the thing that got us all in a frenzy, is that, you know, it looks like Hogan's losing. Looks like someone's going to beat him. He can't beat Hogan. No. And then he hulks out, as we started to call it, you know, and then he's like, he'll get himself out of that situation and he'll pound on the guy and he'll knock the guy down and then he'll give him that great big leg drop and you know it's game over.
So here's my thing with that. I will attest that that is not a lame finisher. For some people, it would be. But with if that leg came down over your head.
What I mean is it's not lame. But what I mean is, when you have like Bret Hart's sharpshooter,
yeah.
When you have like the tombstone,
yeah.
When you have the DDT, when you have the camel clutch, and then you have Hogan. Leg drop. I mean,
but he made it look good, and he made it look credible.
And you're right, because of his size, that sells it.
Yeah. Now, when he wrestled in Japan, he didn't use the leg drop. He used a clothesline. He used the Axe Bomber, which was a crooked clothesline. And it was a lot more technical. He used a lot more holds in Japan, but yeah.
So listen, the Ultimate Warrior on that mic, I mean, like, oh my god. When the stars align, Hulk Hogan.
Take control, Hulk.
Nobody knew what he was saying. Nobody knew. I don't even think the people at the WWE knew what he was saying.
And they 100% didn't. Like, Jim Ross would sit there and be like, what? Jim Ross has some choice words about Ultimate Warrior, but
well, listen, you know, talk about interviewers just for a brief second. Mean Gene Okerlund.
Oh my god,
he was fantastic, and I'm pretty sure he was sitting there going, "What?"
Yeah. Well, like Mean Gene Okerlund, I remember one of my favorite Macho Man Randy Savage promos is the "Cream Always Rises to the Top" promo. Now that this is a testament to how good Savage is on the mic, because he was just sitting in catering and he's got one of those little pots with cream in it, and he goes, okay, I can make a promo out of this. And he does. And Okerlund is standing there like, okay, sure.
But, you know, he never showed it. You know, there was the Gorilla Monsoon, Mean Gene Okerlund and Billy Redline were great interviewers.
Yeah.
They were just fantastic. Especially because they looked so small, except for Gorilla Monsoon, against these big guys, right? So back to Hogan. I mean, so now we get this. Like, he's had some really great matches. None of them really do compare to the Andre the Giant one.
No.
But then he goes and leaves the WWE.
Yeah.
Goes over to
WCW.
And forms the NWO.
Well, so he went over to WCW in 93. NWO formed in 96. Now, when he moved over to WCW, Hulk, at that point, Hulkamania was already starting to
It was waning. It was waning. It was a whole... The 90s was a whole different era. But this is the point that I'm getting at. I still remember the look of disbelief on this woman in the audience's face, whether she was a plant, whether it was genuine, whether the camera just caught her, I don't know. But I still see that woman with her perm and her big glasses and just this look of shock when Hogan turned heel.
Yeah, I think it was genuine, because like when Hogan turned heel, the crowd started throwing garbage in the ring. Like, they started throwing all sorts of litter in the ring. They were not happy.
And then, well, of course not. This hero, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, kids, yay, cereal, movies, toys, everything. And now he's going to be a bad guy. But to Terry Bollea's credit, I thought he was really smart about this. He said, if I'm going to do this heel thing, you know, because he didn't really want to do it, but he decides to do it because he's professional and all that. If I'm going to do it, then the only way Hollywood Hulk Hogan can win is if he cheats.
Yeah. Now,
because he didn't want to set that up, because he'd already set this whole thing up about, hey, kids, if you're honest and if you're good and if you're true, you're going to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, so he didn't want to send that mixed message. You know, like he had to be losing. And if he was going to win, then he had to cheat.
Yeah.
Because he wanted them to see the bad guy not being as good as the good guy.
And as his WCW career went on, it started going into the crapper, but whatever. I'm going to purposely skip over WCW. And we're going to move into when the NWO came into the WWE, because this became one of the defining moments of wrestling for my childhood, okay, or my teenagehood specifically. So the NWO comes back after WWE buys the WCW, and it winds up being Hulk Hogan versus The Rock at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto, Ontario. Now, first and foremost, if you're not a wrestling fan, you need to understand that Canada is a very vastly different audience than the rest of the world.
Yes.
They will boo the faces and cheer the heels just to be chaotic. They love screwing with the show, and that's all there is to it. Hulk Hogan was the heel going into this.
I don't know if that's 100% true. I'm just going to say we like who we like.
I will agree with that, but there are people. Are times that they just want to screw with the show.
Yeah, you and Alex particularly. Yeah.
I won't mention some of the out of pocket stuff I yelled during AEW, but anyway,
which is why I don't go with them.
So Hulk Hogan versus The Rock. Hulk Hogan's the heel going into this, and The Rock is the face. And they wind up both coming out as the face, because the plan match is Rock was going to beat Hogan, and it was going to go into this lengthy feud. But Toronto had other ideas, and they started chanting for Hulk Hogan. They started chanting Hulkamania. And by the end of this match, Hogan had been beaten, sure, but they shook hands, and the crowd went nuclear. It was one of the most insane moments at that point I'd seen in wrestling. Now, I've seen some others that would rival it, some others that are more insane. But at this point, this was huge.
Yeah.
And he came out the next night. He broke away from the NWO. And Hulkamania still rules.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that petered out because of some stuff that happened with Hulk Hogan later on. He wound up becoming Mr. America. It was a bit silly, but for that one night,
he had his reality TV show too, and yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
I've seen an episode or two.
There's a YouTube channel called Wrestling with Regret. They did a review of both seasons, and it.
But what I do remember of it is his daughter Brooke, right?
Yeah,
she was moving out, and Hogan's in Target. Now, listen, this is to me just one of those things when you see something that I can't remember if it was the electric company or if it was Sesame Street off the top of my head, but there used to be this little song for children back in the day that said one of these things is not like the others. One of these
That's
things,
Sesame Street, yeah.
You know, one of these things does not belong. When you see Hulk Hogan pushing a Target cart and just filling it full of stuff for Brooke's apartment because she's moving out, that's what goes through your mind, because he doesn't know what to get, but he's going to make sure his daughter has everything that she needs. And he's like in housewares, and it's like a set of tongs, she needs that. And, you know, he's just pulling the stuff off the shelf. The cart is like full of stuff. Right, like I've never seen a cart so packed full of stuff. And people will say, this was probably done just for the show or whatever. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think this was genuine. Like, you know, loves his daughter, whatever, right? And I'm just like, that is just, because he's huge, right? He's got the 24-inch pythons, and he's towering over everything. And can you imagine going into your average Target, and there's Hulk Hogan in housewares just, like, trying to decide which is the better frying pan?
Well, this one's the size of my hand. This one's a little bit bigger than my hand. Hulk Hogan was, and frankly to this day, still is larger than life.
Well, yeah, because there is a difference between Terry Bollea and the character of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And I want to make that clear because I love Hulk Hogan. Terry Bollea,
He's done some questionable things.
But that character of Hulk Hogan back in the 1980s, my hero, everybody's hero. Like, we had like a couple heroes in the 80s. Luke Skywalker, Hulk Hogan. Like, these were like huge, you know. Everybody loved him. My mom, who didn't watch wrestling, loved Hulk Hogan.
Vince McMahon had something he called the airport test. And to this day, I think Hulk Hogan was the epitome of the airport test. The airport test is, you're walking along the airport and you see someone who's so much larger than life that you have no choice. And you know how packed airports are.
Yeah.
That you have no choice, but to, not just to notice this person, but to turn and look at them. And Hogan defined that because he was, throughout the 80s, throughout the 90s, he was a real life superhero and supervillain.
Yeah.
He looked like a superhero. He had TV shows and movies where he played superheroes, and it was credible because it was his look.
Yeah.
He played it so well.
Hulk Hogan's rock and wrestling. I mean, wrestling honestly was never bigger than in the 80s, I think.
Do you know who voiced Hulk Hogan in the rock and wrestling cartoon?
Who?
Brad Garrett.
Well, you know, that makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
It does, doesn't it?
But I mean, like, wrestling in the 80s was massive.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's when they started bringing celebrities into WrestleMania. Yeah. You know, like, you have all of those wrestlers, you know, like Darren Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Captain Lou Albano, just to name a few, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, all in Cyndi Lauper's video for Goonies.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was fantastic to see that was how big and popular wrestling is. Honestly, maybe the Attitude Era, but I haven't seen wrestling that popular since.
No. I'd agree with that. I mean, wrestling right now is in a boom period, which is great, but it's still nowhere near. Well, we're going to see. Let's wait and see how things go with the Paul Triple H Levesque era,
okay, as they're calling it. It's in a boom era. I can't disagree with that necessarily. But what it's not in is a household name era.
Yeah.
And that's... Like the 80s, household name.
That's why I'm saying this. Let's see how the Paul Triple H Levesque era goes. Because the crazy old man is gone.
Yeah.
That's it. He sold a ton of his stock. He's gone.
Yeah.
Thank God. But as far as it goes, they are... And it looks different. They got rid of Kevin Dunn, who was the longtime producer since the mid-80s. They got this new guy. And they're using drones. They're using new types of cameras. It looks different. It feels different now.
It's more modern, yeah.
It's much more modern. And
do you ever think we'll ever see Hogan back for even a guest appearance?
A guest appearance, sure. Well, I mean, we're never going to see him in the ring again. That can't happen. No. He's because he spent 20 to 30 years jumping on his butt, he has wrecked his back.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
No, but I mean, like, sometimes I wonder if they, you know, like, Jesse the Body Ventura became a commentator.
Yeah.
You know, like, wouldn't it be great to have Hogan as a commentator, or wouldn't it be great to have him as a special referee? Or even, what used to happen is when wrestlers, like, Classic Freddie Blassie was a wrestler.
Yeah.
And he got too old, so he became a manager.
Well, and so there's an issue with that. So Jake Roberts is currently managing a guy called Lance Archer in AEW. Now, on paper, the idea of Jake Roberts as a manager, absolutely brilliant. There's two problems. One, Jake Roberts. Okay, yeah, Jake Roberts is amazing on the mic. He's not good at putting other people over on the mic, and that becomes very evident, self-evident when he does a promo for Lance Archer. Two, Jake Roberts is a big guy. So by having him with Lance Archer, who in himself is a fairly big guy, he doesn't look as impressive.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the problem with Hulk Hogan. He's a big man, whoever you pair him with, and especially with today's crop of wrestlers.
Yeah, that's true. They're sleeker.
Yeah.
It's like the Terminator versus Terminator 2.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Lance Archer, when we were at the London show, we wound up staying in the same hotel as the wrestlers. So one of my buddies rode the elevator up with Lance Archer.
Nice.
Yeah.
So Hogan hasn't tainted his legacy, I don't think. Maybe a little bit, maybe not. I'm still remembering where he was.
I think that really depends on how entrenched as a wrestling fan you are. If you're a casual fan, you're not going to be aware of some of the stuff that he's done or said.
Right.
In the moment when I'm watching a Hulk Hogan match, I'm a kid again.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember what he can do and how enthralling he is.
Yeah.
But as a wrestling fan, I look at some of the stuff that he's done, said, or outright lied about, and it's hard to forget that.
Yeah, and that's why I said earlier about the separation between Hulk Hogan, the character, and Terry Bollea.
Yeah.
Because Hulk Hogan, the character, don't badmouth him.
Yeah.
Don't badmouth him to me. That was, as a Gen Xer, don't badmouth Hogan to me, because that was everything in the 80s. It was how I bonded with my father.
Yeah.
It made wrestling riveting, because we didn't get the big guys on the average show.
Yeah.
They had special shows where we saw the big guys.
Yeah.
You know, where we saw the A-listers. Other than that, was usually a mid-carder and a jobber.
Yeah.
You know, if one of the A-listers did come in, that was amazing on that wrestling show. You know, so you had to go to the special events to see them.
You know?
Saturday night's main event was one of the first forerunners of the modern, and the stuff that they did. I talked about this with Jake Roberts over at London Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
That moment where he attacks Randy Savage at his and Miss Elizabeth's wedding.
Yeah.
And he brings out the asp, and, you know, he's like, that was the stuff that you would only see then and there. Whereas now you kind of see that on average, on the average show.
Oh, that you're hitting a sensitive spot for me. Yeah, that is true. Okay, so I just want to talk about Damien for a second. The not the character from The Omen, but Jake Roberts' snake.
Yeah.
So when they did that scene, that snake actually bit Savage.
Yeah.
And prior to, Savage is like, he says to Jake, "Well, you let it bite you." "I'm not letting it bite me. Why would I do that?" "Well, I'm not going to do it if you don't let it bite you." And so Jake said, "Okay, fine." So he hit backstage. He's like, "All right, here, it's going to bite me." It bites him. And Savage goes, "Okay, fine, I'll do it." But it's like, just some of the stuff that comes out about things that happen backstage. Like, just imagine these giant meaty men backstage talking about, "All right, well,
yeah,
you have a snake. I'm not going to let it bite me unless it bites you." Yeah. Like, just the ridiculousness of it.
I've met Jake Roberts twice, one in Niagara Falls when we were in London. And I remember talking to him in Niagara Falls about it. And I said, "You were my..." Like, he was. And I don't know why he was, because my mother is petrified of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
But she was his favorite wrestler. She liked Jake the Snake Roberts for some reason. She'd always leave when he was going to put the snake out.
Yeah.
But she liked watching him wrestle. And I said, "Your favorite wrestler, but she doesn't like snakes." And he says to me, "I got news for you. I don't like them either." And so then I saw him. I went home from that Comic-Con and I saw the Resurrection of Jake Roberts or whatever it's called. And I didn't realize that he had been through what he'd been through. So when I saw him at London, it was a whole different story for me, because that's when I put my arm around him very tenderly and I said, "I want to tell you something." I said, "I met you in Niagara Falls Comic Con. I saw the video about your
you know, coming through your addictions and all that kind of stuff. And I told him, I said, I just want to tell you how proud I am of you for doing that and how proud I am that you've stayed sober and, you know, keep going. And said, you know, and he was teary. He was getting a little teary. And he said, he told me how much he appreciated that and how much, you know, that by said meant to him, because he likes to know that people are in his corner, that they don't just see him as this, you know, sort of person, right? So yeah. It's like, we have to remember that these are entertainers, but they're also human beings. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to be fallible. They're going to make bad choices in their lives. And if somebody, anybody, celebrity or not, anybody is trying to be a better person, don't throw up their past in their face to them.
Yeah.
Support them. Help them be that better person.
And I'm just going to bring this up because I don't think it's talked about really enough. Is how amazing Diamond Dallas Page is.
Yeah.
Because he helped Jake Roberts get back on his feet. He helped Scott Hall get sober.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah. And his, I don't really call it a workout video, but his.
Oh, DDP yoga?
Yeah. Like there was a guy who couldn't walk.
Yeah.
The guy's out running now.
Yeah. He was, he destroyed his legs because he was a paratrooper during Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he started doing DDP yoga, and it helped him get use of his legs back. Yeah. So, I mean, DDP is amazing. I wish his WWE career had gone a little bit better, but.
And on that note, too, one of our friends that we know.
Yeah.
Rob Verkest is in the Dark Side of the Ring playing Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
One of the girls, girl I went to college with, Lacey. She played Sunny in Dark Side of the Ring. So yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm happy for Rob. I can't wait to see that episode where he's playing Brutus the Barber Beefcake. But
That is actually available to watch now on Crave.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And on that note, aliens, that is all the time that we have for this episode of Area 51 and a half. Nick, remind our aliens how they can get a hold of us.
Oh, you can find us on social media. That is Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at the Area 51H. Facebook and YouTube by searching for Area 51 and a half. And of course, don't forget to check out our Patreon, where you can get all sorts of exclusive goodies, as well as a shout out on the show.
So aliens, this is Spooky Uncle John and
Snyderman 501, Nick Snyder, brother.
Thanking you for joining us here on The Landing Pad, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
I pity the fool. I pity your mama. I pity your mama's fool.